somewhat live and somewhat not, depending on what day it is. It's the Mike Novak Show. If not the country's best gardening, environment, and green living show, then the only one that puts it all together in a handy self-opening package, and it lets you sing. So try it right now.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. And true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
Yes, they are, and howdy doody, everybody. It's good to talk to you. Let's immediately go to the person who is the subject of my somewhat new segment, 5 minutes with, and this week it's 5 minutes with Kathleen Thompson. Kathleen, are you there via Skype?
I am. I'm right here.
Great. Love that Skype-y kind of echoey thing that goes on with.
Well, I know. It's Skype style.
It's Skype style. You know, folks who listen to radio and podcasts and, ooh, it's a Skype style. It's a Skype-y kind of thing.
You know, edgy.
Right. Echoey and edgy. Are you speaking to me from a barn?
I kind of, yes. I'm staying at a friend's apartment. He's had it all renovated with nice clean walls and floors and no rugs and no furniture. And there's nothing to absorb the sound. It bounces everywhere.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? That's very Skype-y. Yes. Let me talk about what's going to be on the show today before we get to our conversation. It's very interesting because my first guest goes back several weeks, and sometimes I record these things and then I hang on to them and I pop them in. And I could have popped it in several weeks ago. I had other things going on, but I talked to Karen Hudson at the Good Food Festival and Conference in Chicago, at the Illinois Forum. I'm sorry, the UIC Forum, University of Illinois, at Chicago Forum. She's an Illinois farmer, co-founder of Illinois Citizens for Clean Air and Water, and regional consultant for the Socially Responsible Agricultural Project. Now, probably the most interesting thing that came out of this conversation, and I don't know why, on the 150th anniversary of the end of the Civil War, this isn't a huge deal. But she was talking about CAFOs, and they are concentrated animal feeding operations. On the interview, I actually say confined animal feeding operations. I suppose you could use that as well. And if somebody wants to call,
animals are certainly confined. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, they are. And if somebody wants to call me on that, you know, knock yourself out. The EPA, the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency, is supposed to be doing an inventory of all those factory farms, and if you want to shorten, you just call them factory farms in Illinois, because they have no idea how many are in the state, and they started counting them, and their number is different from the number that Karen Hudson's group came up with. It's much lower than the number her group.
That's a big surprise.
But here's the headline story. There might be one of those operations very soon near Abraham Lincoln's historic home in New Salem.
Oh, no. What do they think there?
9,000 animals stinking up the joint. And as she said in the interview, you know, the land of stinking Lincoln Yeah, it's amazing that. And why this is not big headlines, not just in Illinois, but throughout the Midwest, is remarkable to me. That I don't think anybody has even heard this story, so I'm going to consider myself breaking this story that this CAFO might be coming to New Salem, Illinois, the boyhood home, but the young man home Abraham Lincoln.
That's not just a historical landmark or anything like that. There's a restoration, right?
Well, there's you know, the interpretive center and everything else that's going on down there. So she's going to talk about that, and it's kind of interesting and disturbing. And I'm also talking to Benjamin Vogt. That's it, Benjamin Vogt. No, Benjamin Vogt. He's an author, blogger, lecturer at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. He has a 2,000-square-foot organic prairie-style garden. He owns a native plant garden, a coaching and design business called Monarch Gardens, and that kind of leads us into the conversation. He's presented all over the country, very fancy guy, and he has a blog called The Deep Middle. And you can find that on my website, mikenovak.net. The Deep Middle.
What does that mean?
I think it's about being in the heartland, in the middle of the country, in Nebraska. All right.
Okay.
And he's come up with this thing called the Ultimate Pollinator and Native Plant Gardening Guide.
Is that a book?
No, it's a post on his blog. And that's the amazing thing. He has got all these different links to milkweed profiles and where you can get milkweed plants. And he talks about monarch and milkweed issues and native plants by region and native plant gardening and beekeeping and pollinators. And
he has all of this on one post?
Well, it's all in one. It's a bunch of links. And he puts the link and then he puts like a one-line explanation and then you can, and it's just a great resource. And
can we steal that for our website?
Well, it's all, yeah, that's the whole idea. I want people to listen to this and then go to mikenovak.net, MikenowakNet, and take a look at it. And that's a good way to find out where to get it. And we'll talk to Benjamin Vogt. Meanwhile, speaking of websites, my webmaster is Kathleen Thompson.
Kathleen Thompson is your webmaster. You've already introduced me. Yes,
did
I am.
Did I get it wrong?
No.
Okay. And she's speaking in her echoey chamber because that's what webmasters do. But we've made a lot of changes in the website in the past several months. Among them, sort of focusing on these podcasts and the show itself, so that people can go to the homepage. And what can they do when they go to the homepage, Kathleen Thompson?
Well, the main thing they can do, I mean, there's a lot there, but we're focusing a lot of it on the podcast. So you get to the homepage of mikenovak.net, and you're going to see a list of 8 or 10, they're going to see 8 or 10 descriptions of programs, either whole programs or single interviews. And there's, you know, there's a little picture next to it, and then there's a description of what's on the podcast. And then you can just click where it says listen now, and it'll take you right to the page where you can listen to the podcast. Or if you want, you can click the thing that says read more and go to a page where you have written all kinds of stuff about what's on the podcast.
Well, I spend too much time writing stuff about these podcasts, but
it's true, but it's interesting stuff with good links.
And that's the point, is that if you're listening to this podcast and you say, wow, I'd like to know more, and boy, I wish I had a link. You know, a lot of people listen to radio and they have no idea where to get that information then. And that's why folks have websites, so that you can track it down later, or even at the same time if you're listening on your computer.
Exactly right. And back in the day when basically most people listened to the broadcast, there wasn't a lot of, you couldn't go to the site and see all the other things that have been talked about in past weeks and past months. Now you can. It's right up front on the homepage.
Well, you could, but it wasn't as easy. We've made it a lot easier for you to look at all the podcasts. You used to have to go to the podcast page. Now you just go to the homepage.
You couldn't see it on the homepage.
Right.
So now you can see on the homepage a whole lot of interesting interviews and topics, and you can just pick and choose which one. If you want to listen to the one about bees, then you listen to the one about bees. If you want to listen to the one about demolition waste, you listen to the one about demolition waste. If you want to listen to gardening myths exploded, you can listen to that one. So it's all right there. And the other thing that's right there is you can click on a button that says environmental articles and tips, or gardening articles and tips, or book talk. And these are all ways to access more information about the topics that get discussed on the Mike Novak Show. And we're beefing that up because people indicated when we did a survey of what should be on the website, lots and lots of people said they wanted more articles. So they're going to get it. And that's, it's on its way now. It's by no means complete, but it's well on its way. What is not there yet is the resources page. Pages, many pages.
many pages.
Yes.
Of resources. Yeah.
Those are currently being worked on to be updated and added to, and make sure all the links are clean and unbroken. And those will be going up pretty soon.
And while we're on the subject of what's on the website, I just realized that today is the first day that I've got a great new sponsor, a couple of them. Who are actually old sponsors. One is Bonnie Plants, and I'm really happy to have them on board because not only do they grow great plants, but they've got a great new app which you can take advantage of, and you'll hear about it in just a second. And you can go to my website right on the homepage and click onto the Mike Novak Referral Network. And you can get, if you click on the referral network, you scroll down, you'll see the free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. And you click on that and you find their app about, well, they call it the ultimate app for beginner and experienced gardeners. There's a free gardening resource, learn how to grow, track your harvest, get expert tips for gardeners of all levels. So that's really cool, and I'm glad to have them back. And the other great sponsor, of course, is Milorganite. And both Bonnie and Milorganite have been with me for a while now. But, of course, Milorganite is organic lawn care. And what I like about them is they're one of the first recyclers, big-time recyclers, because they've been doing this for 85 years, taking this organic product and there's a little bit of iron in it, and you can use it on your lawn and garden, and it will feed your soil for up to 3 months. It does not burn because it's not synthetic. It's organic, and that's Milorganite. You can go to milorganite.com. For them, for Bonnie, you can go to bonnieplants.com. And I thought I needed to get those two out. So that gives us about...
You need to explain what the referral network is.
Oh, okay. Well, why don't you, since you got about a minute to do this.
Okay. Well, anybody who wants to get a really good quality product or service that is connected in any way to a green world, you can go to Mike's Referral Network, and that's on the website. It's on the homepage. Click on the homepage. Go to the Referral Network. There's a list of categories of services and products. You click on the category. It takes you to the people who provide those products who are supporting the Mike Novak Show.
And we love them all.
We do, and you can click on their links to their websites to get more information about their products or services.
Well, there's our 5 minutes with Kathleen Thompson. Turned out to be more like 10, but thank you for calling from your Skype cave. And you have fun in the Skype cave. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Could an app be the answer to a better garden? Absolutely. It's the new free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. Note, track, and photograph your garden's progress. Personalize your weather and reminders. Get variety info, grow guides, hands-free dictation, and more. The Homegrown with Bonnie Plants app, the sharpest tool in your garden. Download it free on the App Store.
Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, How Do I Love Thee? Let me count the ways. 1. Great articles in every issue featuring plants and the people who grow them, science, art, and beauty, how-to stories, why not two stories, and what the heck is that stories. 2. Great columns like the Q&A that helps you with your toughest gardening questions. Ask the experts for great advice and regional reports from areas just far enough away to be almost exotic. 3. Photos, photos, photos. If you truly want to get inspired, they're worth 1,000 or sometimes 10,000 words. 4. The calendar of events for everything that's going on in the area. It's the most comprehensive you'll find anywhere. 5. The garden classroom, where the basics are taught in an easy-to-digest way. 6. My column on the inside back page. Okay. That one maybe not so much. If you're a gardener, or even if you're not, you're going to love Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, a publication of state-by-state gardening magazines. Go to chicagolandgardening.com. But if you're in other parts of the Midwest or the South, try one of the 21 magazines in those regions by going to statebystategardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. I love coming to the Good Food Festival and Conference, this year's edition 2015 at the UIC Forum. I was sitting at my table selling copies of Attack of the Killer Asparagus and informing people about my podcast, and then I went wandering into the Commons, where there are vendors, there are foodies, there are people like Karen Hudson, who's been on this program before, who is with a couple of organizations that you should know about. Illinois Citizens for Clean Air and Water is one of them, and that's iccaw.org, and also Socially Responsible Agricultural Project, and that's SRAproject.org. Now, why is Karen important? Because she's fighting the battle of CAFOs in Illinois, and those are confined animal feeding operations. And they are nothing but bad news. And she has been on my program before. We've talked about this. Karen, it's great to see you.
Thank you so much, Mike. It's great to see you today. We have so many people, old faces and new. It's been a great day so far, and I'm so glad I bumped into you today so I can give you an update on what we've been up to.
Okay. Now, this update, just because I'm not sure when this is going to air, we're March 21st, 2015, and what is the update with CAFOs in Illinois?
Well, first of all, there's a very large facility attempting to locate near Lincoln's New Salem, which...
Oh, okay, stop right there. Lincoln's New Salem?
Oh, yes.
Abraham Lincoln, yes. Our 16th president. I've been to New Salem, and it's this quaint little area where you walk around, and it's very quiet, and it's very nice, and they've got an interpretation center there, and they do arts, and they explain what it was like living in the 19th century, and where Lincoln grew up in New Salem, Illinois, and they're going to do what?
A large-scale swine operation or factory farm of over 9,000 animals is slated to be located near Lincoln's New Salem. And there is a very large coalition of people we're working with. In fact, they borrowed my sign, which I've had about 15 years, that says Illinois Land of Stinkin', instead Land of Lincoln. And it's a parody on what's happening to the state of Illinois. I was out of town for 2 weeks, and I arrived home yesterday to our farm, and I was greeted with the stench from our local factory farm, which is located 4 miles from my farm. So it is a problem. The odor is the tip of the iceberg, but we're continuing to work on legislation in Illinois to tighten up some of the problems we've already got.
All right, look, before we move on here, okay, What does a homeowner like you or a farm owner do if you have something like that in your neighborhood? What sort of recourse do you have?
Our recourse is really not much. There are many nuisance suits going around the country right now, and literally that is one of the few things that's working. With nuisance, you can go in and say, this is a nuisance on my public property and my quality of life, and those suits are following through, and people are being forced to go down that avenue to protect themselves when actually the law should be protecting them.
It absolutely should, but and your property values go down, obviously.
Yes. Our research shows anywhere between 5 to 90% is the decrease in property values, depending on the topography of the land, where you're located from the facility, what type of facility, and the number of animals.
And I believe you and I have talked about that
yes.
before. That's some of the recourse. That's in the courts. That's where some people are going with that, is that our property
yes.
values
have gone down. We have appealed property taxes in Illinois and have had them lowered. One story that your listeners may be interested in, there was a large-scale factory swine farmer out in the Midwestern Plains that appealed his own property taxes, being that his house was on his farm, and he had his own property taxes reduced from his own factory farm. So it goes both ways.
That is the classic definition of chutzpah.
Yes.
It is. You set up a factory farm and then claim, well, you know, the smell's terrible. You better reduce my property taxes.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, you know, when the industry says, you know, this shouldn't happen, I ask, why would a factory farmer appeal his own property taxes? And most of these facilities do not have the owner or the investors or the operators live nearby. Usually there is nothing there. Now, on many factory farms in Illinois, you may see a house nearby. But for the most part, the owners of these corporations do not live anywhere near these operations.
Yeah, it's like being a slumlord.
Yes, yes.
Basically.
Except
that they're making a ton of money on it.
That's exactly it. And one of the things we're working on in Illinois is the fact that we want some local county board control. If I lived where I live down in central Illinois, if I was to oppose a low-level nuclear waste that would be coming in or garbage from Chicago down to my county in Peoria County, I would be able to petition my county board, and they would be able to have a yes or no vote whether this industry would be able to be allowed in my county. But that's not the case with factory farms in Illinois. We do have county board hearings, but not once has after a county board has said no to a facility, has the Department of Ag denied it. So it's basically an exercise in futility. We want local control where the local people can have a say of what type of agriculture they want in their community.
I would say the same thing about a lot of other issues, you know, including fracking and
exactly.
Other things. But one of the first things that happens with these big businesses is they take away the local control.
Yes. They set about to systematically cut local control out of every county in the country. That is one of Ag's biggest motives, because they do not want the local voice to be heard. And that's one thing we're working on in the state of Illinois with some new legislation we're looking to see in April. And the other issue is that a facility such as the one we're talking about near Petersburg, Illinois, near Lincoln's New Salem, once it's in, it can expand up to two and a half times its fixed capital cost every 2 years. So once a facility is in, it's in, and it can double and triple in size. And that's not the kind of community business development people want.
You know, we're fighting a battle in Chicago right now to keep the Lucas Museum off of the lakefront. And it's as if the Lucas Museum, once it was in place, suddenly swallowed Soldier Field and McCormick Place. And just got bigger and bigger and bigger.
Exactly. You know, the folks that I work with in 30 counties in Illinois through Illinois Citizens for Clean Air and Water, many of them have health problems, their property values have plummeted, their quality of life has deteriorated. This does not mean that they are against agriculture. Most of the people
I would argue this is not agriculture.
Yes.
This is an abomination.
Yes.
Basically, it is inhumane treatment of animals. I mean, and people who follow this issue know what goes on at CAFOs, and animals are kept in very tightly constricted areas. Their lives are miserable, okay? And I don't want to go into graphic detail about this, but It's not healthy. It's not humane. They get pumped with antibiotics and on and on and on. And now, and you and I have talked about it on my show before, you've got ag gag laws where you can't even stand across the street and take a photo. Well, we haven't had those passed in Illinois yet, but we got a... It could happen.
After we took photos of the largest animal waste spill in Illinois history, which occurred 4 miles from our farm, they tried to pass legislation within the following year to make it a Class 3 felony to take a photo of an animal feeding operation. Now, our photo was used by the Illinois authorities, and they used that photo to prosecute an $80,000 fine on this operation. So, in retrospect, if that would have passed, anyone taking a photo of a spill could be subject to a penalty and a fine and jail time.
Whatever happened to the First Amendment in this country?
We're still fighting for it. We're out here and we're growing. We have a lot of traffic. We have a lot of requests. And we've been working all over the country with a socially responsible agricultural project. One of our projects is a mobile meat processing unit where we can bring a reefer truck that's been retrofitted. They go around to medium and small-sized farms, and they will kill, cut, and wrap on premises. The animal has less stress, and these farmers are able to provide their customers with locally grown, sustainable, humane meat. It's just another idea to fix our regional food system.
Yeah, that's Karen Hudson. As she mentioned, socially responsible agricultural product and also Illinois Citizens for Clean Air and Water. Okay, the interesting thing that you told me about and made me want to grab you and bring you out in the hall to talk here is the study that the EPA, is it the Illinois EPA?
Yes, the Illinois Citizens for Clean Air and Water filed a petition using a provision in the Clean Water Act because we felt Illinois EPA was not regulating factory farms, these large-scale animal feeding operations in our state. And what we found came out in a report that was published in the Drake Journal of Ag Law. For example, we saw that some of these operations were never visited or visited every several years. And they were counting on just neighbor complaints to visit these operations. There were so many discrepancies we found. We filed a petition, and it clicked a federal investigation from the federal EPA on how Illinois EPA was behaving. Sometime later, they came back with a failing grade for Illinois EPA. Our EPA got a failing grade due to our group. So
from whom again?
From the federal EPA. They investigated.
Wow.
And said,
you know,
they're not working.
I suspect that there's a lot of people who agree with that assessment that the IEPA, I'm not really sure why they're there, because they don't seem to be very effective at all.
Well, there's not very there aren't enough inspectors, for one. We have about 30,000 animal feeding operations of all sizes in Illinois, and we need this industry, but if it's not going to be regulated, let's do something about it.
So we have a failed IEPA, and they were searching for CAFOs in Illinois.
Yes. So they were supposed to come up with an inventory. That's not a lot to ask. For food security.
How hard could it be to miss that? All you got to do is smell it.
For food security issues even. If we have an outbreak, we should
You need to know.
Yes,
yeah.
For food security issues even. So what Illinois Citizens for Clean Air and Water did was we launched our own investigation with the help of Northern Illinois University, Dr. Kendall Thu, and students from Northern Illinois University. And we looked at GIS maps. We used USDA data and several other. We did an exhaustive search. And we came up with about 560 CAFOs. We know there's about 1,000, but on our own.
In the state of Illinois.
In the state. And we came up with about 560. And recently the EPA sent their report in, and they only found about 250. So if Northern Illinois University, using student interns, can find these, there is no excuse. We know there's more out there, and they've got to get on the job. And if they can't, then we've got to make some big changes.
Maybe the IEPA needs your interns.
That's an idea. If the citizens have to do this work, so be it. But let's get a number. They need an inventory. They need to regulate these guys. They regulate themselves. They're threatening health. Your listeners may not know, but about 80% of all the antibiotics produced in the United States go to animal agriculture in the absence of disease. Where does that go? It comes out the tail end of the animal. Up to 75% of those drugs come out the tail end of the animal and end up in Illinois' surface waters and on our fields and in the air. And that's a public health issue, and we're all looking at people that are living in the Chicago area all the way down to Carbondale, Illinois. Superbugs are on everyone's mind. It's killing people.
I have to ask the question, isn't it outrageous that there's no database about CAFOs? I mean, it seems like a no-brainer. It seems as though, okay, here's the way I would put it. It's say, okay, the IEPA sends out a survey. Do you have more than X number of animals in X amount of space? Wouldn't that do it?
Right now, we have also found that they don't even, what the EPA turned in didn't even have the exact addresses of these facilities. We saw coordinates on a map, but what's needed are names, owners, addresses, essential information for emergencies, for food emergency issues, for spills, for the public health. They have not even turned that in. And it's a travesty that a group like ours could find such discrepancies.
So we live in a country where you can have tens of thousands of animals in a feeding operation, and there's no knowledge that that exists to the general public.
Unless the neighbors call to complain and file formal complaints, the EPA essentially said that they were going to complete the database as complaints about specific facilities came in. So on the basis of that, it's
what could possibly go wrong?
It's unacceptable.
It is. It's totally unacceptable. All right. What is it that you guys are working on in terms of legislation in Illinois in the coming year?
Well, actually,
the coming session.
Yeah. We're looking for more local control. We want these county boards who hear these proposals to be able to say yes or no and have it stick. Right now it does not. It's just an advisory vote, and it has no teeth in it.
Yeah.
We want to close this expansion loophole. Once they're in, they can expand and then and infringe upon the neighbors and the entire community. And what we'd like
get
to
used to. Hey, you folks who want to visit New Salem, I would do it really, really soon. It's not going to be habitable territory after a while.
Well, we'd like to see some setbacks from parks and wildlife areas as well. Now, I'm a farmer, and when they make a setback for those listeners, it's a distance the facility has to be away from a home. Now, in a setback case, it goes from the middle of your house, not your property line. And if you happen to own 10 acres, they're not going to go from the edge of your 10 acres. They're going to go to the middle of your home. That's a takings of my private property.
Yikes.
So we've got a meeting coming up on April 11th, and we're very excited. Dr. John Eichard from Columbia, Missouri, he is a economist and an expert on factory farm issues. He's written so many books. He's a wonderful mentor of all of ours. He's a speaker for Illinois Citizens for Clean Air and Water on April 11th, and we're offering free breakfast and lunch. People from all over are going to be coming and telling their stories. We're going to talk about legislation, and we're also conducting water quality testing training and providing all those materials for people who are facing CAFOs in their community.
And how do people get more information about that?
They can call Karen Hudson. My home phone is 309-742-8895. We welcome anyone to come and take part.
Can they also go to iccaw.org?
Yes.
All right. Karen Hudson, I am so glad I ran into you here at the Good Food Festival and Conference. Thank you so much. And you folks listening to this, if you're not outraged, there's something wrong with you. I don't even know what to say. If this doesn't bother you that we can't even identify the factory farm outfits in our own state without, you know, it's almost like you need a divining rod or something to find them, don't you think?
How about a few students with some good resources and a GPS and mapping?
More interns. Karen, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Captain's Log, Stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks.
of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Wharf.
Mr. Data, be more specific.
Asparagus officinalis, or killer asparagus, was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak. I'm familiar with his work.
Of course. Attack of the Killer Asparagus is required reading at Starfleet Academy.
Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Gwynock of Ninglador.
Captain, shields are failing. Thank you, Mr. Worf. Mr. Data, options.
Captain, it seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
Aroundtheblockpress.com. What do they have to say?
It appears that Mike Novak is a slapstick every gardener, taking all our self-delusions, mishaps, and confusions and playing them for big laughs.
That's not very helpful, Mr. Data.
No, it is, however, highly accurate.
Trying to weather the housing market? Consider replacing your windows and siding. Remodeling Magazine says they're some of the nation's most popular projects today.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling and energy needs. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Benjamin Vogt is what you would call your basic, I don't know, overachiever. He's a guy who's, he's based in Lincoln, Nebraska. He's a writer, including poet, and he's got a 2,000 square foot organic prairie style garden. He has written for publications such as Garden Design and Fine Gardening. He lectures at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln. I'm just scratching the surface here. He's been on the show before, and I welcome him back. Overachiever Benjamin Vogt. How are you, Benjamin?
I'm currently overachieving by being on your show.
No, I don't think so. I think you're underachieving here. It's like, as
okay.
I said, I'll pick up the phone and call you, and then we'll make this happen. But that's okay. That's okay. Tell your friends. Tell everybody. Oh, listen to the Overachieving Mike Novak show. It's great to have you back. And the reason I have you on the program again is because you do a blog called The Deep Middle. And how would you describe The Deep Middle?
Oh, I would describe it as me mostly doing philosophical and lyrical reflections and rants on why we need to be using native plant gardens and gardening more selflessly and thinking beyond just pretty and going to pretty and going beyond to what life can we help that also helps us too in the end.
You know, that's a really good point. The last time you were on my show, we kind of got off into the swampland of philosophy of gardening. And one of the things I think I agree with you about is we need to get beyond pretty. I was speaking at a garden club last night. And one of the things that I have realized in the past decade, as I've spoken to garden clubs, is we need to get beyond admiring our roses and move on not just to natives, though, but to growing vegetables and teaching the next generation how to do that. And I think too many garden clubs are stuck. They're kind of stuck in the middle of the 20th century. And they need to get past that. And so that's kind of my mission. I imagine your mission is more about how important it is to plant natives in our spaces, whether they're natural spaces or contrived spaces such as in cities, because you live in a city yourself. It was with interest that I caught a post that you had on Facebook. I will admit I saw it on Facebook, I'm glad I did because I don't, you know, I miss a lot of things. There's so much going on that flies by. Oh my God. And Twitter, don't even try to keep up with Twitter.
No, it's awful.
It really is. Twitter is not for people who want information, really. Twitter is for people who want opinions from famous people. That's what makes Twitter work.
his opinions. So you got some guy who's got, you know, a gazillion followers, and he tweets something, ironic or snarky, and everybody retweets it. Yay, we just figured out how to use Twitter. Yay. No, but, you know.
Well, you know, I'm thinking of tweeting nude pictures of milkweed. So, you know, stay tuned.
Yikes. You'll never get past the censors on Twitter. They're on to you. But you posted something on the Deep Middle called The Ultimate Pollinator and Native Plant Gardening Guide. And it's really, a lot of it is about the monarch butterfly. And I fear sometimes that my whole show is starting to revolve around the monarch butterfly, but I guess this is, you know, something that I've glommed onto because it seems every time I see a story about it, it seems to smack me in the face, and say, hey, we're not paying attention to what we're doing to the planet. And here's a really good way to focus on that. Would you agree?
Well, yeah, I see monarchs and milkweeds and the issue with them as sort of a gateway drug into the larger issues of habitat loss and loss of ecological diversity. So that's how I see it.
I agree. I love that idea that it's a gateway drug to the larger issues. And so you put together this Ultimate Pollinator and Native Plant Gardening Guide. And if folks want to know more about it, they can go to my website, mikenovak.net. And I will have it up there. But you can also go to deepmiddle.blogspot.com. And then you got to track down the this one is from 2015/03, etc. There's probably an easier way to find it. Do you have a search function on your blog?
Absolutely. Yep.
Oh, okay. So there you go. So just look for the pollinator guide. And you go through a lot of stuff here, and I just wanted to talk about a little bit about some of it on the show today, so folks have a better understanding. Even as, you know, when this thing airs, this is as the monarchs are right now making their way north from Mexico into the United States. And you start with milkweed profiles, and I guess we should start there because all milkweed is not created equal, is it?
No, I mean, there's, you know, we have something like 140 species of milkweed in the country, but it turns out that monarchs really only use about a dozen or 10 of them. So, and a lot of that has to do based on region, but also how toxic the milkweed is, and so that's one of the bigger issues. There's lots of issues, but that's one of the biggest ones.
Well, so tell me, if folks are afraid they're going to plant the wrong milkweed, how do you steer them straight?
Well, you should go to thedeepmiddle.com. because like you say, on this post here, I started with milkweed profiles, and you can follow some links to look at, you know, milkweeds in depth from the National Wildlife Federation. You can look at species by state. You can learn how to grow milkweed, and the Xerxes Society has a great post I linked to about, you know, everything you ever want to know about milkweed. And so, you know, that's where you can start to dig in. You know, I really held my back on this post. I think I've got 30 links or 20 links or something, but I could have had 100, so I really had to cut back.
Well, is there a plan to turn this into something larger than a post, maybe a book?
Oh, no, I don't think I'm the person for that. You know, the Xerxes Society is publishing a book. I think it comes out this fall. It's coming out through Timber Press, and it's about butterfly gardening and creating butterfly gardens. And I'm going to have some pictures in that book, but I'm sure that will be a great resource for folks who want to know more about butterfly gardening. And I'm sure monarchs will be mentioned in there.
I certainly hope so. Well, good. I'm glad you're going to have some photos. So we start with milkweed. And one of the things that folks think is, and one of the milkweeds making the round is an annual milkweed, where it's annual actually in the colder zones, and it might not be as helpful to monarchs. And so the idea is basically find milkweed seed from milkweed that grows in your area. So if you're in Nebraska, that's going to be different from my area in Illinois in the Chicago region.
Yeah, I mean, it might be the same exact species, but it's going to have completely different genetic origins that are fine-tuned to the area, so it grows hopefully better and stronger because it knows the environment. It has a genetic history of being able to adjust to the climatic swings and all that stuff.
Yeah. You also talk about native plant guides by region, native plant gardening. There's a nursery in my area here called Possibility Place. Have you ever heard of them?
Yes, I have heard of that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Connor Shaw established that, and he and his family run it. And I interviewed him once, and he said, basically what we do is, you know, we have a radius of 100 miles, and that's where we collect our seed. And
awesome.
That's it, yeah. And then they bring it back, and then they grow those plants. And so you know that the plants that are produced there came from the area. Now, they specialize in trees and shrubs, which is really good because it's sometimes hard to find those natives. What other advice would you have? I know this is, you know, a 15, 20-minute interview, but and I'm sure you could go for hours, and you do. But what do people miss when they think about planting natives?
What do they miss?
I think it's
too easy to, you know, you hear all the time that native plants equals easier gardening. And that's true, sort of, but not really. You have to get the right native plant for the right space. I mean, you can't just go buy a native plant, stick it anywhere in your landscape and expect it to be low maintenance. And to work its magic and bring in all the butterflies and all that stuff. You got to do a little bit of research, and there are tons of resources online that are really easy to find. So it requires a little bit more work to get the native plants in the right space, but it's worth it in the end because you don't have to replace the plant. You're not struggling with it. You're not upset because it's not doing what the plant tag said it was supposed to do.
You know, the thing that I learned about native plants, and I can thank Doug Tallamy for this, and I think it's very, very important, is how they support our native insect populations. You know, it used to be that you planted natives well because they're going to survive and they use less water. As you said, the idea that they're easier to maintain, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch. Everybody wants, they want a no maintenance garden. That ain't ever going to happen. But the thing that was always missing from that equation, and I became aware of it just in the past few years, is that we also have to support the critters that live in our part of the world, on our continent, and that have developed for millennia with these plants. And that's another reason you put in natives.
Yeah, and, you know, I've got a link here talking about native bees. You know, it's easy to talk about monarchs and butterflies because they're so flamboyant, and we're usually not scared of them. Some of us are. But, you know, we have native bees that are a specialist on just certain native plants. So you might have native bees that will only forage on a particular aster while it's blooming in the fall for 2 weeks. And they're going to be taking that pollen back to where the larvae are, if they're in the ground or in a tree hole or something. And that's what the larvae are going to eat over the winter, and they emerge as bees in the spring. Native bees are 20% more efficient at pollinating than European honeybees. So, you know, let's get these native plants around our vegetable gardens, too, so we can have, you know, more fruit and higher quality fruit set, better tomatoes and more blueberries, et cetera.
All right, let me ask you a specific question here. It's spring. What native plants are going to be in flower right now to attract those native bees?
Oh, gosh.
Ah!
I've looked at that for hours. Ah. Well, one of the earliest ones that blooms for me over here is Pasque flower, anemone. I'm going to say Patton, P-A-T-N-S. That's a very drought tolerant ground cover. It's about a foot tall, and that's starting to bloom right now in our city. So,
yeah, Pasque flower. That's a lovely plant.
Flower. Yeah, native to northern plains. So that rules out probably Illinois.
Well,
is it native to northern Illinois? I don't know.
You know, that's a really good question. I would have to look that up. And that's the other thing. You know, you have to do your homework on all of this and figure out where they're from.
But you learn so much, and you get so empowered when you do it. It's just amazing how good it feels when you do it.
Yeah. That's Benjamin Vogt. He's an author and lecturer and fan of native plants and native fauna. And he has got a blog called The Deep Middle. We're talking about his column, The Ultimate Pollinator and Native Plant Gardening Guide. Just a couple of other things. You talk about designing gardens for monarchs or more. How do you design a garden? And this has always been the knock on natives, and you know it, and you've probably heard it so many times you're sick of it. They look messy.
Yeah, geez, I hear that from landscape architects here in town, and it just, blow a gasket. You know, there's several issues here. I think one of them is that, I live out here in Prairie Central here. So when you take a wildflower that's used to growing up on the prairie where it might not have consistent water and the soil might not be as rich, and then you bring it into your garden and your home landscape where it probably gets more attention, it does grow differently. And I'm thinking of something like stiff goldenrod, where out in the prairie it might be 2 to 3 feet tall and perfectly erect. Then you put it in the home landscape and it's 5 feet tall and it's flopping over. So what am I trying to say here? I'm trying to say there is honestly some trickiness to it, but once again, it's doing the research and it's finding the right plant for the right place, and certainly not putting tall plants close to the sidewalk where they are going to maybe flop over and bump into people's arms.
Yeah, and the other thing, two things I would think of immediately, let me use a non-native plant as an example, Russian sage. Where people they amend their soil forever, and they have this really rich stuff, and they put the Russian sage in, and it melts away and dies, and it never reaches its potential. And then you've got one in the middle of a city on a corner, and it's exposed on a parkway, and it's never watered, and it's just beautiful, and it's upright and fantastic because it likes it harsh. You know, sometimes we kill them with kindness, and that's what I think you're getting at it with the prairie plants. Sometimes the advice in your garden books has always been to just keep adding compost. Well, sometimes that's not the right move.
A lot of these wildflowers out in prairies and meadows, they actually like nasty clay soil. That's what they've evolved with and adapted with, so that's what they like.
Nasty clay soil. And we've got nasty clay soil here in the Chicago area. It sounds like
it's a party.
What's that?
It's a party.
Yeah, everybody, let's join in and garden like, well, you know, that's kind of funny, though, because here we are, you're in Nebraska, I'm in Chicago, there are other parts of the country that have the same thing, and yet we're trying to put in delphiniums. What is that all about?
Well, you know, if you have the right space for delphiniums, I don't think they're going to like dry clay too much.
No, they're probably not going to like that. And then finally, you get around to some of the books I mentioned. One of them, Bringing Nature Home, Doug Tallamy's book, which I would advise everybody to read. And you mentioned a couple of other of my friends, Roy Diblick's The No Maintenance Perennial Garden. I've been up to Roy. Roy's been on my show many times.
Awesome.
And he's a great guy because his whole deal is it doesn't always have to be natives. Just get plants that play well together. Try to have as many natives in the mix. See, I'm not a purist about that. Maybe you are, and maybe you and I should duke it out here.
I am that, but I don't like to use that word. I am the P word, but it's only because if we start thinking way over here on this side of the spectrum, maybe we'll at least get to the middle.
Okay. No, and you're right, because there are so many people who don't even go in the direction of natives. I got to tell you, a lot of these gardening magazines, and they have the latest and the greatest in this new thing, and it comes from Eurasia or Africa or wherever. I just turn the page. I have to admit, I'm not interested in a lot of that stuff. And it doesn't make me friends with all the people trying to sell stuff. Sometimes I think we go too far down that road. And, you know, if you can figure out how to grow a coneflower really well, that might not be a bad thing.
No, and there's lots of lovely native ones that you don't even see for sale anywhere.
Right, exactly. Oh. You see the ones that have been all fluffed up and purpleized and orange, oh, yeah. Orangized and yellowized, and you just go, why do we need an orange purple coneflower? But as Connor Shaw, and I love one of the reasons I love him, the guy at Possibility Place, because he's kind of a curmudgeon. And he always says to me, those purple cone or the orange coneflowers are all going to revert to purple eventually anyway.
I have found so many of them. I used to plant a lot of them, and I found them much weaker. They would either die within a year or within 2 years. And so I just went back to straight species, and they just keep going.
That's it. And I think that's a good way to wrap up. Just go back to straight species. Anything you want to add before we close here?
Yeah, butterfly bush is not beneficial to insects.
I am so glad to hear you say that. I said that last night. I did a talk last night, and I said, I hate to break the news to you folks, butterfly bush is not a native. Yeah, it attracts some butterflies, but do you see any other activity on that plant? And it's invasive in a lot of places.
It's very exclusionary. It's a lot better to plant the sunflower. You'll be helping more life if you plant one sunflower.
Than if you plant butterfly bush.
Absolutely.
I love that. All right, Benjamin Vogt. If you want more information about him, well, he's on Facebook, as we mentioned before, so you can, that's V-O-G-T is how you pronounce, or you spell his last name. You pronounce it Vogt, like what we did unsuccessfully in Chicago yesterday. And you can go to his blog, deepmiddle.blogspot.com. Anything else you want to promote?
Man, rethink pretty.
Rethink pretty?
Yeah, rethink pretty in our gardens.
Oh, that's a great philosophy. Rethink.
Well, I actually use that on some of the memes I do for my Facebook page, Milk the Weed. So.
Okay. And for those folks who are interested in this guide that Benjamin wrote, and I think it's just got the most remarkable links and information, The Ultimate Pollinator and Native Plant Gardening Guide. As I said, I'm going to post that on my website, mikenovak.net. Go to the homepage or go to this week's show and you'll probably find it. Benjamin Vogt, always good talking to you. I hope we do it again soon.
Me too. Thanks, Mike.
If you listen to this show, you'll learn that if you're a friend of the earth, you're a friend of mine. One of the tools I recommend for great growing results in your yard is Milorganite Organic Nitrogen Fertilizer. Milorganite's slow-release, goof-proof formula provides consistent feeding, and it's safe for your children and pets. Milorganite contains 85% organic matter, which promotes beneficial microbial activity and improves the soil's ability to grow and nurture grass and plants. Trust the fertilizer that's been proven effective for more than 85 years. Milorganite, for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a store near you.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I have great news. Natural Awakenings, Chicagoland's only monthly magazine dedicated to healthy and green living, is now available throughout Cook and Lake counties. We feature articles about fitness, local food and drink, gardening and environment, green energy, healthy kids and families, even healthy pets. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
You can find more information about the Mike Novak Show at mikenovak.net. That's MikeNowak.net for links, photos, and commentary.